Sloppy Spoilers with your host, DT2. Welcome to another episode of Sloppy Spoilers. I'm your host, David Taylor II. You know me as DT2 Comics Chat on Twitter. I'd like to welcome my guest host, David Nemesis Howard. What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Glad to be back this week. Sorry I missed last week. Had some stuff I needed to take care of, but looking forward to talking with you guys.
And other guest host, Steve Shadewing Sellers. What's up, Steve?
Oh, not too bad. Living the quarantine life like we all are, and hopefully we can make an entertaining diversion from staying indoors.
Living the quarantine life. That's a song right there if I ever heard one.
Yeah, I didn't choose the quarantine life. The quarantine life chose me.
Oh, man. Those are lots of good titles. I'm going to have to follow that up. Anyway, tonight we're going to be talking about Harley Quinn Episode 9. I'll start off with the customary overall thoughts. And as far as I'm concerned, in this episode, nothing happened. I'm just watching it all the way through. I'm just kind of shaking my head as I'm watching because I'm like, nothing happens. There's no new information. There's no new developments. There's no new revelation. There's no new, even no new exposition. There aren't even any new words until we get to the end, but the end is not about Harley. So if I had to say anything, I would say this episode is kind of a definitive look at why she's already come full circle. She's already maxed out as a character. She's already done everything she's gonna do. Because all she does is repeat. And this is a pattern, this is a common pattern of problem we've seen with today's superhero offerings, because the main character becomes the least interesting character on their own show, and everyone around them gets developed, and they just travel in circles, and it's very, very annoying. So this episode was pretty much the epitome of that for me, because I'm just rolling my eyes. I'm like, nothing happened, nothing's happening, just treading water. So anyway, give me your opening thoughts. Start with Dave.
I agree with you to a certain extent. I do believe that nothing happened, which is interesting to me because after going back and watching 8 and then seeing 9 now, I'm like, they're finally doing an arc, like a story arc that's progressing. I could see that they're going to build into something, especially with the end of this episode, episode 9. And it has nothing to do with Harley, and I've liked it more than just about every other episode of Harley Quinn so far, because it had nothing to do with Harley. So, you know, it's like, I'll admit, I kind of skipped ahead a little bit, but it's like suddenly Harley's not the focus, and, you know, and they bring her to Legion of Doom, and there's other people dealing with their own problems, and I find that much more compelling and interesting of what's going on with everybody than anything that happened for, you know, I would say almost all the episodes, minus the one, I think, I forget which number it was, that was pretty good, that we all enjoyed.
Opening thoughts? Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I would say, to a certain extent, you guys are right that this is, you know, in a way, kind of a filler, in a sense. But for me, my general reaction to this was a whole episode of Harley Learns Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Harley learns nothing the episode. And because it's like we're seeing her going through the same patterns, you know, as though nothing has happened the last 8 episodes. It's just like I'm sitting here watching her do these things with the Joker particularly, and I want to hit my head against a desk watching her do the exact same things that she was doing in episode 1, except that, you know, now she's a member of the Legion of Doom, and that's the only difference. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I will say, though, the ending with Harley was the one thing that kind of redeemed this for me, because this was something I wanted to see happen for a while now, and finally watching a little bit of reckoning for her learning nothing, it was very, very satisfying. And I'm also agree with you that the last scene does look very interesting, because at least it has nothing to do with Harley per se, and it looks like there could actually be a plot moving forward. So and those two things, I think, made this less of a frustrating episode, but otherwise it was a bit of an annoyance to have to sit through.
Well, I'm done giving this show chances to try to convince me that it's doing what it says it's doing, because Harley is not smarter, independent, or stronger. None of those things. So I'm pretty much done giving the show chances to prove that. However, going back to an earlier comment that Nemesis made about them trolling us, I now believe that some of the writers are trolling each other. I kid you not. I now believe that they're openly making fun of the stuff that they're supposed to be preaching, because that's the only thing that makes sense to me now. Because everything that she does is the opposite of what they're trying to sell.
I think that's very true, and I also have a hard... I need to go back and check, but the writing is so disjointed. I have a hard time believing that the same writers are writing every episode. I'd love to go... I should have checked that before we started recording, because I'd love to know if it's the same writers writing every episode, or if we're getting different writers doing different things. It feels that way sometimes. I don't know about you guys.
I did get a sense of that with this episode, because it kind of... When you watch Harley and Ivy in this episode, it doesn't really flow very well from where they were in the last episode. And I kind of felt like we had kind of jumped a step. So it could be certain of that. Although I will say that, you know, to the extent that, you know, the characters are not consistent and the writing's not consistent, I have to put that on the showrunner, because they really should be keeping track of this.
True.
Well, with Smallville, with Arrow, and with The Flash, specifically, because they don't really do it with Supergirl, with Smallville and The Flash, the shows with male leads, they humiliate them more often than not. They make them stagnant. They make them not learn anything from year to year, and they're the least interesting characters, without exception. Now, that's what this show has done with Harley, which I find really fascinating. I thought it was going to be more like Supergirl, more preachy and soapboxy, and it was. If you remember back to the first episode, they had the old white man on the boat, old rich white man drinking champagne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those were the villains, and so it was really kind of blatant and in your face. And we said, okay, we get where this is going. But that's not true. They've made her kind of a personal self-parody. Unless they pull it out in, you know, the next couple episodes, but they've made her kind of, you know, a joke to herself, which I just find fascinating, because they've inverted the trope. And I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but I'm starting to believe that it is, which means that they're trolling the very things that they're supposed to be, that they're so-called selling, I think.
Well, not only that, is that, like I said, I kind of got motivated and decided to skip ahead a little bit, and not giving away the plot points or anything, but there's a scene in another episode that's coming up where Frank the Plant makes a WNBA joke, which is so far afield what you think that this show is trying to say and do, which really puts the trolling, you know, like front and center. I mean, Frank is going off on a bunch of things that I'm like, all right, no self-respecting culture warrior would write these jokes, you know? So I was like, what is going on here?
That's right. Okay, so as this episode opens, we find Harley and her crew being inducted officially into the Legion of Doom. And it's not quite what was expected. What we find out is that they literally accepted Harley, but they figured that Clayface, King Shark, and Dr. Psycho were her henchmen, and they get shuffled downstairs. They get shuffled downstairs to the henchmen room. And then they find out they have to go on a mission for Bane, who's still doing stupid car tricks, and who's still very tongue-tied, and who's still just being made fun of, even though I do think it's kind of funny, because he's so lame everywhere except Young Justice. Young Justice is the best Bane ever. Every other place we see Bane is just like, yeah, okay, whatever. So what are your thoughts about finding out that they really do think that Harley's crew are on the same level as regular henchmen. Start with Steve.
I found it a little bit funny at first. I'm like, okay, well, at least that gives them something, you know, interesting to do where they have to, you know, essentially prove that, hey, you know, we actually are worthy of hanging the big guys. And actually, though really honestly, it's not exactly deserved, because I would honestly put Dr. Psycho above Harley in a lot of respects. Like, properly written, Dr. Psycho should be a major villain and not slammed down into the basement with all these guys like Clayface and such. But the joke, I kind of, you know, went along with the whole thing. As far as Bane goes, yeah, I have to agree on that point. And I will say, I was reading Paul Dini's comic book issue of, you know, Batman Adventures, and he did the exact same thing. He turned him into an absolute joke for, you know, Batman to beat up. And it seems to be like the same thing here. I don't know what it is about Bane that they make him a joke all the time, but especially since when well written, particularly in Nightfall, you know, he should be a villain that, you know, the top tier should be taking seriously. But, you know, it is what it is. But all in all, I found it enjoyable.
I was going to say, when Bane was introduced in Nightfall, he successfully broke the bat.
Right.
Something that other villains have been trying to do, but Bane figured out how to actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got, you know, several great other arcs out of that, got introduced to Azrael, Azbats, as we call him, and all that. I understand, again, like you're saying, I don't understand why, in just about every incarnation we see him in now, he's just a buffoon. I don't get it. Anyway, thoughts on Harley and the henchmen, Dave?
Well, since we were just talking about Bane, I'll go to that one first. I do find it interesting that Bane is written either as a joke or as an incredibly dangerous opponent, and there's, like, no middle ground, you know? So I think Batman the Animated Series, for the most part, kept him pretty dangerous. You know, even the movie was in Mystery of the Batwoman. He did get defeated by the Bat, but he almost killed Batman and Robin and was brought in as an enforcer. But then you look at the animated series, The Batman, and the one appearance he came in, Superman basically flicked him aside with his finger, you know? So, which is true, but they made him look completely ridiculous. So I find it interesting that definitely they're doing that with Bane here, and whoever is doing this loves to make fun of that Bane voice that was in, The Dark Knight Returns?
Dark Knight Rises,
yeah, the movie. You know, I think was kind of ridiculous. I also find it interesting that they stitched up the mouth. Every time I see that, it just comes off as very disrespectful to me. And I agree with you guys on, as far as Nightfall. I mean, he's supposed to be a master tactician, one of Batman's deadliest opponents. So I don't think he gets a lot of love. I think people were upset that he got right off the bat was so dangerous. Right off the bat, no pun intended. And it was so dangerous.
The thing is, he earned that, though. I mean, there were a lot of stories building up to the issue where he got his back broken, you know,
right,
establishing Bane and how dangerous he was and what he was about, which I think a lot of people seem to forget.
Right, and I'm a big video gamer, and if you look at Bane in every single one of the Arkham Knight games, he's an incredibly mm-hmm. dangerous opponent. You know, it, like I said, he's either written as an incredibly dangerous opponent or as a joke. There's no middle ground with Bane, which is weird.
And can we ask once and for all why he doesn't cover up his venom tubes?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Doesn't he get beaten the same way every time, or is that just me?
Or at least, you know, hasn't he heard of, you know, those metal sheaths that tubes go in, you know, to protect them? You know, put some of those on there or something. Do something, man.
Right.
They just want to have a convenient way of beating him, and they don't put any real thought into it.
Yeah. As far as the crew going down into the goon? I thought that was pretty funny. Having been an IT person relegated to the basements like that, I thought that was funny as well. You know, it definitely reminded me of you're down there and the water's dripping down and the air doesn't work, you know, and everything. I think it's ironic that these guys get shuffled down there when I would not only say that Dr. Psycho is a bigger villain than Harley, I would also say that Clayface and, well, maybe not Clayface, but definitely King Shark is. So the three of them down there is definitely a slap in the face. I thought it was funny for effect, but if you really want to go and think about it from a geek aspect, it's like, what in the world is going on here? And I thought they had every right to feel slighted and frustrated, and that is actually one of my favorite parts of this whole episode, is the fact that Dr. Psycho is not taking it.
He is not taking it.
He didn't want to come back to the Legion of Doom in the first place. He was, you know, worried about being there. He didn't think they'd accept him. And then he thinks he's going to get his office, and he finds out he's down in the basement with, Bob the Henchman. And he is not happy about it. So I did like that. I thought that was written well. I thought that was a genuine reaction from him. And he brings the other two along with him. Because I think that those two, the way they've been written in the show, would have been more likely to just go along to get along. And Psycho's like, no, we're not standing for this. So I appreciated that.
As he said, we actually have powers.
Exactly.
I love that line. Okay, now, moving on, I want to touch on something we said before. I don't want to quite skip to the end yet, but we can touch on it. And I think Steve said it, and that is that when we see the scene of Harley and Ivy, quote-unquote, making up or reconnecting or whatever, it does feel like there's an episode or a scene or something that we skipped based on how we left it. But I also want to say, the show has done, and I've seen this happen so many times, the show has done a really good job of establishing Ivy as having the real arc, or at least a real arc. The show has shown her constantly facing her eco-terrorism and deciding, is that evil or is that not, which is what makes her so interesting as a character, just like Ra's al Ghul. The show has shown her realizing that she had feelings for a D-list character like Kite Man, and he's so D-list he doesn't even care he's D-list. He loves it. And she realized that she cared about him. In this episode, Plan Dude is busting on her outfit, and it obviously gets to her because she, you know, puts this stylish kind of hat on, which is really kind of funny because it looked kind of retro. But it shows that Ivy is actually progressing, thinking, reacting, learning and changing from her experiences. And Harley is not. So, you know, what do you think about the writing when they make a side character actually have the arc and the main character doesn't? Because, again, I can name so many shows where that was the case. But I'll start with Steve. What do you think about that?
I think this should be called The Poison Ivy Show, guest starring Harley Quinn. Because Poison Ivy is easily one of the best characters in this whole thing. I would say she's up there with Dr. Psycho for me personally. And yeah, I mean, there's no question that Ivy actually has an arc. You know, whether it's her encounters with Kite Man, whether it's the fact that, yeah, I'm going to try to destroy this manufacturing plant, and I don't think that it's evil. I don't think that I'm doing evil. I think I'm doing a good thing. All these things are kind of establishing how Ivy is a distinctive personality in a lot of different ways, and we see that here as well. And I think we also see that again, you know, in her whole arc with Harley, because, you know, she starts in one place and she ends in another place. So, yeah, I mean, in many ways, she's basically the silent protagonist, as it were, of the series, in a way that Harley is not.
And Ivy always makes it clear that she has no desire to join the Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that makes her quite distinctive, because she's one of the few supervillains that doesn't. She's content to do her own thing. Go ahead, Nemesis. What do you think?
Well, that was the point I was just going to make, is that, you know, Ivy has definitely had an arc through this whole thing. She's shown character growth. She's shown vulnerability. She's shown that she can rethink her decisions and realize that she's done something wrong, you know, in her relationship with Kite Man. And then, exactly what you're saying about the Legion of Doom, that was the last episode, but I thought that was so compelling, was that she is making what we think is the point of this show, which is the female empowerment and trying to promote female characters, and she tells Harley right out, it's like, look, I feel no need to be part of this sausage fest, as she calls it, but the boys club, which is the Legion of Doom. I'm fine doing my own thing. How great a message is that, really?
Well, she's one of the few characters where the parameters of her character design completely support what she's saying.
Exactly.
Because we have the power to control all plant life on Earth. There's mm-hmm. no plant life you can't control. And the one thing she has not used, if you notice on this show, she has not used her hypnotic kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very interesting because that's the only way she uses to control people. But she has, if she did, I forgot, but I don't really remember her using her hypnotic kiss. She uses her plant life control all the time, but not that kiss.
Well, and she did it to a certain extent with those kids.
Oh, yeah, episode. I forgot. The grossest scene ever where she's kissing the little kids.
You right? blocked that out.
Yeah, I blocked that out. Actually.
But I think that's a conscious decision by the writers, too, because once again, it's these mixed messages, but if you're really trying to send this message of we don't want to over-sexualize the characters or anything, well, that's one power that is very, you know, got that sexualization to it, where she's seductive and, you know, one of her powers is using her feminine wiles and then kissing people and bringing them under control. And if you're saying, and if you're trying to get away from that and just presenting her as a supervillain to control all plant life and putting that one aside, it's almost like they're doing that on purpose. And to be honest with you, I haven't really missed that power that much. I mean, I think Ivy is overpowered in this series, but so are, you know, so is Harley, so are several other characters. So it just seems to be the thing they're doing. But Ivy has been just fine the way she is. I've enjoyed watching Ivy operate as a supervillain, or like Steve was saying, and you were also saying, David, in her mind, she doesn't see what she's doing as evil. Which is another great point. She's like, because she has that argument, you know, or discussion with Harley where she's like, well, if we're still going to call, you know, saving the environment evil, okay, but, you know.
So Lex gives her some new bats, nothing seems, skipping over that. Bane and his new henchmen are going to knock over a yogurt shop, nothing seems, skipping over that. So we'll go to something we're talking about, which is them sitting at the table and the Joker's plan. But before we get to the Joker's plan, I must also repeat what I've said several times now, is that the main enjoyment for me, whether they mean it to be or not, is seeing the other members of the Legion of Doom. I really like to see them in action and hear from them, because I find that also very, very interesting. Mainly because when you see them all assembled together, you have to wonder how they ever lose. Between Reverse Flash and Sinestro and Black Adam alone.
Yep.
Holy cow. I'm like, you guys could have taken over the world 3 or 4 times over. And that's what gives rise to show why our heroes are so important. That they find a way to outthink you or outfight you or outlast you some kind of way. But I really want to see, I would love to see an adventure. Like, remember Justice League Action? The little 12-minute shorts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Justice League, and it combines different heroes and villains every episode. I would really like to see this show give us one episode of Reverse Flash, Sinestro, and Black Adam.
You
know, if they made this Legion of Doom the animated series, I would actually be more interested in watching that. You know, just because of all the dynamics that are there, and, you know, all the kinds of characters you could have teaming up, like we talked about, Black Adam and Two-Face. That's something that we really have never seen very much of, and, you know, and you're here, you had them talking in the last episode. And the whole reaction was, I want to see more of that. And so, yeah, I see what you're saying on that point.
Yeah, even from a funny standpoint, it was still compelling and interesting, all these different characters. And I definitely agree with you. I mean, this is just a general comics comment or observation, but the Legion of Doom is so powerful and so interesting. You look at them in the animated series, Justice League Unlimited. You know, Legion of Doom was great there, you know, when Grodd was leading them, and then Lex led them. And then eventually, to save the world, they team up with the heroes, and they show just how capable they are. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you look at, you know, what was the name of that comic series, a three-parter, Justice, I think it was?
Alex Ross?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Justice.
Yeah, that's amazing as well, and that's all Legion of Doom. So that was some great stuff. So, you know, it's just another one of these things where I don't want to bang on DC Comics. I'm a DC Comics fan. But I think that they waste a lot of these great characters they have sometime and don't do enough with them.
Even Superman, Batman, Public Enemies,
mm-hmm.
which is my favorite animated, tied with Mask of the Phantasm.
Right.
Favorite animated movie of theirs. You see what the supervillains can really do.
Right.
And you see what happens when Grodd really coordinates them. Mm-hmm. They really get turned loose, and it's just incredible. And it also shows why Batman and Superman are the best, because if they can't outfight you, they can always outthink you.
Right.
But, you know, so anyway, I want to see more of that. So the next development we're talking about is the fact that Joker wants Monument, his face, which sounds just like him, and his mouth opens and there's a TV on it with him, sounds just like him. And how much did he say he wanted to build that for? 800 million, almost a billion?
600 to 800.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, 600 to 800, which I thought was hilarious, but I thought this is just like him. And this is what provides the well, not the segue, but this is what provides the plot point for he and Harley to kind of reconnect, which is kind of the, if there's going to be a heart of this thing, that's his thing. So they're talking in the kitchen, and they're talking, you know, this is just professional, this is just platonic. Joker's like, why don't we get together just for a professional drink as colleagues or whatever. And every single person watching the episode is screaming at the screen, no, Harley, no. Just say no. Your first instinct was to walk away, stick with that. But somehow, we were just talking about seduction as a power. Somehow the Joker convinces her to at least grab that drink. So, I know we're going to talk more in detail about what happens after that. But just initially, when you saw the scene in the kitchen, when you saw her willing to give in, you know, or you saw kind of her resolve weakening, what were you thinking as you were watching that? Start with Nemesis.
I go back a second to the boardroom. I really like this scene. I think it's funny, you know, having worked in corporations and been in the meetings and stuff like that, watching the politics all play out, you know, and how Harley was the only one speaking out, and then watching Lex. I really liked Lex in the last two episodes in this one, the way he's kind of doing his thing and playing people off each other, and he's needling Joker a little bit. I like that. I thought that was interesting. I wish I had seen more of Lex before this, and also going forward, I would like to see more of him. And then fast forward to then Bane talking behind Joker's back in the kitchen. Having been in a company, you see that all the time. You know, people talk back, and then the Joker shows up, and of course he badmouths Harley to her face then after he was saying something exactly opposite. So I thought that was funny, and that was Bane as being kind of a weasel. You know, we've already covered that ground. As Bane is just, I don't know what Bane is. He's not Bane. And then
he's war.
Yeah, exactly. And but then seeing Harley, you hit it right on the head. You're sitting there watching this train wreck that you know is coming. I mean, it's just barreling down the tracks, and you're like, oh no, oh no, she's not. She couldn't possibly. Oh my God, she is. You know. So, although I had a little bit of nostalgia over it, because to me, this is. Yes, Harley is supposed to have learned these lessons. She's got Ivy in her ear. But this is classic Harley Quinn. You know, this is always, she's always got an opening for Joker to exploit a lot of times. You know, you go back to the animated series where there's one part where she says she's sure she's done with the guy and everything. And Joker was going to kill her friends. And then Joker just sends her a little note or something, and she's right back to the place she was at. And it's like, you figure that enough has happened to Harley with Joker that she'd be over that. And it's like, you see, once again, she hasn't learned her lesson. You know, this is what we were all talking about before. She hasn't learned that the Joker is that scorpion who's going to sting you every time. You know, and she's like, no, I can do it this time. It's like, no, you can't. So...
as Steve says, Harley don't learn nothing.
And this is where it's really kind of starts being noticeable. I don't think I really had much of a attention about, you know, whether or not she was going to go back and do this. Of course she is. She's Harley. She learns nothing. And it's just kind of frustrating to watch, and you kind of having to slam your head on the desk watching her make these mistakes. You know she's going to make. Because these people never have her learn anything in any of these episodes. Why would you expect anything to be different in this case? So, yeah, there's that. I do want to go back a little bit to the Joker and in the boardroom. I think a lot of what we're seeing with the Joker in this episode is about his ego. And, I mean, when the whole thing that he presents to the board, you know, is about, oh, I'm going to have a statue of myself, a big old statue of myself, and I want you to pay for it. That's like the ultimate vanity project that you see proposed in these kinds of meetings. And so, and I think that during that whole scene, Harley kind of took him down a little bit, you know, saying, no, you can't have your vanity project because you have to, you know, bake your cake to have that frosting there. You know, the plan has to be developed. So I think a lot of what we're seeing with Joker, some of it may be about seeing if he can mess with Harley and having a certain amount of fun manipulating her where he wants to go. But I think a lot of it is about his pride and, you know, setting an example for Harley, you know, not to mess with him. And I think we're going to definitely see that, especially towards the end of the episode. So especially knowing that, I'm thinking, no, this is a trap. It's like Admiral Akbar. It's a trap.
Well, this was the ultimate Charlie Brown with Lucy in the football situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Charlie Brown believes that I'm really going to kick it this time. I got it this time. We're all just like, no, dude, you clearly don't know who Lucy is. Now, I want you to notice something. As they're sitting at the Wild and Wacky bar and they're beginning to reminisce, I want you to notice that very masterfully, they begin to change the physical distance between them, but it's really subtle. So when they first start out, they're very far apart in the booth, almost as far apart as they can be. When they come back, they're a lot closer. And they continue to inch them closer and closer and closer and closer until, you know, we get to the helicopter, we'll get there in a minute. But I thought that was really, really well done. I thought that having a subtle indication of how kind of he's drawing her in and they're moving together physically and they're getting more relaxed and comfortable and with each other, I thought that was really, really well done, because that's really how seduction happens. And giving us a visual of what was happening, I think, was much more powerful than the actual words. Although the reminiscing was quite a bit of fun.
Well, it was the drinks as well. I was going to say, it was the drinks as well. I thought that was interesting, is that suddenly when she's about to leave, the drinks show up. And, you know, it's like anyone who's been involved in the male-female, you know, dance, the dating, you know, scene out there, it's like once the drinks show up, you know, the stage has been completely reset. You don't know what's going to happen at that point. So.
And I'm pretty sure that Joker did that intentionally. I think he probably had that girl, you know, set to bring the drinks out because he knew what he was going to do.
Yeah, because a whole lot of bad choices start getting made when the drinks start to come out, so.
Now, speaking of those bad choices, what did you think about when she stood up the crew? I mean, we knew it was coming, but I don't know about you, but a part of me just hoped in my heart she wouldn't do it, but she did. So what did you think when she texted Ivy, like, eh, I got caught up in, you know, Legion business, I'm not going to make it. What were your thoughts there? Go ahead, Dave.
You know, I'll say this. I actually had a little sympathy for Harley. I didn't excuse what she did. But I did buy that she was genuinely trying, at first, trying to work Joker and figure out a way to help her crew. And it shows, once again, Harley Quinn is supposed to be the central, you know, the master villain here, the central character of this story. But she's so out of her element, especially in this, you know, politics, interpersonal thing with the Joker and everything else. She has no idea how to set priorities and be like, look, I was trying to do this, but Ivy needs me, and I promised her to do this, and the crew is doing these things. I gotta focus on what's most important and be loyal to these people, and if that means I gotta put this aside right now, I gotta go. She has no ability to do that. She has no leadership ability. She doesn't know how to be loyal to friends and family and to get them give them priority and everything she's doing, and that was blatantly obvious in that scene. And I felt a little bad for her, to be honest with you. I think she wanted to, and she has no ability to do it.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, it was much the same. And looking back at this whole thing, you know, some of it was just hand-bangingly annoying. Although, I will say, yeah, I will agree that, you know, to a certain extent, you can sympathize with Harley's situation. You know, she's trying to get what she needs to help, particularly Dr. Psycho and the henchmen, basically. But at the same time, she's just not equipped, you know, to deal with somebody like the Joker, who is highly charismatic, knows exactly how to push her buttons, and, you know, knows inside of her, out of her head, and in a way better than she knows herself. And he uses all those things to his advantage. Now, I will say that past a certain point, and I have to say it was probably around the time when she kind of, you know, blew off Ivy, that was when I started losing sympathy for her. And I started realizing that, you know, Harley is doing the exact same thing the Joker does. You know, these other people don't care. She doesn't care about any of these other people in her life. You know, at a moment's notice, when the Joker comes calling, that's all she cares about. You know, she will put everything, you know, to the side, because for her, the Joker matters more than anything. Whether it's the Legion, whether it's her position, whether it's her friends or Ivy or whoever, she will put them all aside, because in the end, the Joker is where her priorities are. And that comes through, you know, really, really hard on this one. The difference is that she actually pays a price for it, but we'll get into that later.
Now we're on the boat, and they're having drinks again, and I want you to notice they're physically closer than they've been yet in the episode, which, again, I thought was brilliant to show the space between them constantly decreasing, and then they get into the deep stares, into the eyes, and then, you know, we see they've tied up a couple, and they just reminisce on all the crazy things they did together. To me, this was like Rihanna's video, I Found Love in a Hopeless Place. This was like relationships in your 20s. Like, if you ever wowed it out, if you ever just cast off a strain, if you ever were just so crazy in love you didn't have control of yourself, that's what this reminded me of. That time in your life and that state of mind. However, I'm still trying to understand, what message are they trying to send? Are you trying to say men are no good? Or are you trying to say girls are dumb? Which one is it? Because that's what it looks like you're saying. You can't trust men, and girls don't learn nothing. So, I don't know. But anyway, so they're on the boat, and they're up to their old shenanigans. And guess who shows up and says those exact words? That you're up to your old tricks, that would be Batman. I love this version of Batman. So far, they haven't ruined him. Love his voice. Love everything about him. Feels like the right Dark Knight. Batman's ready to take him out, but Joker's all prepared. He's got the Joker copter ready. And then we have our first moment, similar to what you were talking about, Nemesis, where Harley has a flashback. And she freezes, and all of a sudden, everything from the past flashes before her eyes, because she thinks that Joker is going to leave her again, that she's just a distraction, that she's just like Robin, the boy hostage, that, you know, that's all she is.
Mm-hmm.
Joker flips the script and says, come on, what are you waiting for? And she flies off with him, and she's all putting it, and now she's all his now. Then they get in the copter, and then they start making out for real. And then we have the moment of the episode after they've been making out. Batman comes up on the side in the Batplane, and Joker was like, you know, I need you for this. And he pushes her out of the Joker copter, and she falls, and there's a close-up of her face, and we see all the flashback memories, and her eyes are wide open. And for a minute, I thought she was going to wake up, and it was really a dream sequence. Like, it didn't really happen. But as we see, it does happen. And she realizes on her way to the water and starts crying before Batman catches her. So what did you think about that whole thing where the Joker actually does betray her? Where what we knew was coming really happened. But it's still, I kind of felt bad for her. What did you think, Nemesis?
Well, I agree with you. And this is the scene where that moment happened for me, that I thought Kaley Cuoco did such a good job. And where it is, well, first of all, when Batman shows up, I think Steve hit on something. I really get the impression that all of this was set up by Joker. The whole thing was orchestrated by him, including probably calling Batman to have him show up, because having Batman shows up immediately puts the two of them together even closer, because they're going against Batman. And then that moment where she's anticipating, you know, the rope comes down and she remembers that scene from the first episode where he took off in the, you know, the mariachi submarine, you know, and took off driving away and left her there to deal with everything. Well, instead, he looks back and said what you said, which reaches out to her to bring her along. And Kaylee Cuoco does that squeal, that little Harley squeal that is so classic Harley. I really thought she nailed it because it was Arlene Sorkin from Batman the Animated Series squeal, which was always so perfect. It's this innocent, delightful little girl who thinks, you know, everything is some, you know, rainbows and roses and it's going to be happily ever after love. And all of that, it sounds crazy. All of that can be encapsulated in one noise, but it can. And that little squeal was like the fall, you know, the temptation of Luke or something like that. It's just, you realize that she's fallen to the dark side again. She's done. It's over. She's completely lost her mind again, and it's going to hurt her badly. And it ends up, does it hurting her badly. She ends up getting bitten right in the posterior for her stupidity, because the Joker does what you said he does, which is he betrays her again. And he enjoys betraying her. He loved, you know, telling her, no, I've never put this knife in your back. And then making out with her and then stabs her in the back again because she's gone back to him again. And I thought that that was really, really well done. And I got to give credit to the writers who did that, but especially Kaylee Cuoco, who voices Harley, that I thought that she captured the essence of the worst parts of Harley Quinn's character as far as her weakness of her Joker from the original animated series in that particular moment.
Go ahead, Steve, what do you think?
Okay, well, the one thing I would add to this, I agree with a lot of what Nemesis is saying here, but one thing I would add to this particularly is the idea that, in a way, these flashbacks are kind of the show, you know, unintentionally showing us that Harley has learned nothing, again, the refrain of the episode, because you are seeing her say the exact same lines, doing the exact same things in, you know, flashing back to the first episode, and her going through the exact same motions. And so I'm sure that was not what the intent was. The intent was to show what's going through her mind, you know, as she's wondering, okay, is Joker going to pull the football away this time? But in practice, all it does is reinforce the circular nature of her storyline with Joker. That was the first part. But I also want to get into what Nemesis said about Joker having set this up, because I came with the exact same impression. Why does Batman know where to find them? And why does Batman show up? Well, obviously because Joker let him know this somehow, or, you know, had one of his minions do this. But I think part of it was also with the idea of throwing Harley off balance so she doesn't have time to think about what she's doing. And I think that that's very, very clear. When you have that common enemy, you're thinking, okay, how do I get out of this situation? You're not necessarily thinking of, you know, is Joker trying to set me up? So I think there was a bit of that. And I would say the other thing to consider as well is the fact that, I guess it probably would make sense to mention it now, which is the fact that the kiss between her and Joker was televised. And I can't help but wonder if that was also part of Joker's plan, right before ultimately throwing her overboard. So, yeah, I get the sense that some of it is the Joker playing with Harley like a favorite mouse. And I think some of it is trying to put Harley in her place for having disrespected him in the boardroom. I think it's basically a mixture of those things. But in the end, ultimately, it's the same, you know, old song and dance that we've seen so many times before.
See, I think it goes back even further than that, because my guard was up and wondering, what is Joker planning and what is he going to do? Going all the way back to last episode when he gets up to speak at the reception or whatever, and Harley's expecting him to say something negative about her, and he says that she deserved to be in the Legion of Doom and all this other stuff. So he's already setting the groundwork of, like, throwing her off balance and everything. That was interesting to me.
Well, I agree with what you said. I think you made a brilliant point, Nemesis, when you say that since we can't see the actors' faces, because actors use their faces, but these are voice actors,
mm-hmm.
so she had to find a way to encapsulate all that emotion in a sound. And she uses the girlish squeak to convey everything we're just talking about with just that sound, and you're right. And you're also right about how, you know, their kiss was captured by somebody's camera. They were up in a copter. So was that like a telescopic lens? Who captured that? You know, like that or anywhere. But yeah, maybe Joker set it all up from start to finish. If you've ever been in a toxic relationship, or if you've ever seen someone that's in one, I stop by to tell you that that other person is drugs to them. They are drugs. They're an addiction. It's no different from alcohol or substance abuse or whatever type of thing has you hooked. That can also be a person. They can be your drugs. And everything in you can say, I know this is right, this isn't good, I'm gonna let this go, I can't do this, blah, 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 blah. And then you have a chemical reaction that overrides your rationality and you're right back where you started again. And that kind of relationship is just as powerful as a substance abuse relationship. It is actually the exact same biochemical reaction in your brain. So if anything, I think the show has demonstrated that Joker is Harley's drugs, no matter what she says or does. But you know me, I demand equal time. I don't understand why we think that if a woman is addicted to an abusive man, that we're supposed to say, you know, excuse her agency and maybe give her sympathy. But if the shoe was on the other foot, what would we say about a man? He's whipped, he's lame, he needs to man up, he needs to nut up. There's no sympathy for you, there's no understanding, just make a choice and do what's right. That just amazes me, and I'm gonna call that out every time. I don't understand why the reaction is different if we're supposed to be so equal. So, you know, again, legitimately, someone really can be your drugs, but I vehemently disagree with the idea that girls get to be victims and men are just wimps. Because sometimes if a man falls in love with someone and he can't help it, and he gets to can't help it, there's still no excuse for men. No matter what you do, because that person is drugs to you, you still have to be responsible. But no matter what Harley does, because the Joker's drugs to her, it's, well, you know, we need to understand, blah, 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 blah. So that just amazes me. But that's just my little soapbox, you know, because, you know, I'm gonna throw that in there every time I can.
So, just say no to Joker, kid.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just going to throw that in there, you know, because, again, if we saw it in any other context, if it was the man doing this kind of thing and the woman was the drugs, we would call him all kinds of names, and he would be so much less than a man if he acted this way. Just amazes me. Okay, so anyway, they pull off the Bane yogurt exploding cafe shop caper, except the guy that Bane was after doesn't work on Wednesdays, so King Shark gets his back fin blown off. So they're all in the hospital after he's had surgery to reattach that fin. And Harley walks in and tries to lie and tries to act like she got caught up on Legion stuff. And right there on the TV, you know, is the shot of her and Joker making out. And then her crew walks out on her. Here's my question. Now, Nemesis, I know you've watched episodes beyond, so don't give away any plot points.
Okay.
But do you think that will stick, breaking up of the gang? You think that's going to stick, number one? And number two, do you think it should Harley suffer the consequences for the rest of the season of actually losing her crew because she ditched them and lied to them? Start with Steve.
Do I think that this is going to stick? No. Easy answer, no. Well, you know, they're not going to get rid of them, you know, long term. It's going to be, and we know these people don't even stick, you know, to status quo episode to episode, you know, never mind long term. So, yeah, I would expect probably next episode, you know, when we see what happens to Ivy, you know, they're going to get back together to try to save Ivy, and then everything will be fine. Should it? No. I would have liked to have seen, like, at least the rest of the arc, you know, be devoted to Harley actually changing, actually having to deal with this, and then earn the trust of her crew back over time, because, you know, that's really what it would kind of take to earn that. But do I think that that's going to happen? Nah, not really.
Well, go ahead, Nemesis, what do you think?
I will just say that when I was watching this episode, before I went ahead and watched the other ones, I had the exact same thought that Steve did, which is, this isn't going to take either next episode or the episode after. Something will bring them back together, and then they'll just conveniently put that aside, and it'll be in the past, and let it go. I mean, that's just, not only for this show, but for many shows, that's just the status quo now. It's like, you've got a bunch of really deep drama going on between characters, and then it just disappears. You know, unfortunately, that happens quite a bit. I will also add that with King Shark's fin being blown off, this series still pulls no punches in showing gore with no compunction at all. I mean, I don't know, maybe it was just me, but seeing King Shark's fin actually blow out and then embed itself in the windshield, I was like, holy crumoly, did they just do that? And then I was worried they killed King Shark. I was more concerned that they killed King Shark than anything else that happened this whole episode. I was like, oh my god, did they kill King Shark? I was like, oh, I'm going to be so upset. So.
Yeah, it was definitely the moment in the episode where the gore was real, and it still had great shock value.
Because
I was just like you. I was like, whoa, is he dead? He's got to be dead. Was he in that? But yeah, seeing the fin broken off was I was like, oh my goodness. Okay, now to the final scene that actually has the most intrigue and the most mystery and the most the biggest hook to give us a desire to keep watching, and that is that Ivy is pulling off her caper, the one she talks about, but she's doing it without Harley, and we come to find out in the midst of it that they seem to be prepared for her, because there's acid or some type of chemical formula released that disintegrates her plants, and so she loses her biggest advantage in the midst of trying to pull this caper off. And then the plant around her explodes with this chemical. Now, I honestly thought that she was going to melt when she got doused. I was like, oh no, I thought Ivy herself was going to be disintegrated, but she wasn't. But she did go down for the count. And then we see a couple of people come out with hazmat suits on, and they say, we got her. And then cut to credits. I was like, whoa. So that was really interesting. There's so many different ways this could go. Those men could be working for Luther. It could be somebody we haven't seen yet. They could be working for Joker, and Joker setting up yet another scenario where he's going to draw Harley back to try to see if he can, you know, toy with her yet again, as she's his favorite mouse. Or it could be somebody we haven't seen yet. So again, as we've said many times, Ivy is super powerful on this show, and she's a threat in her own right just because of her main power. So give me your theories about who do you think is behind this. Start with Nemesis.
Okay. My theory was definitely that this has something to do with one of the villains that she has crossed, or one of the villains from the Legion of Doom. And I'm going to leave it right at that, because, like I said, I did skip ahead. What I will say is also, though, is that I did watch two more episodes. If they had ended with Harley merely falling into the water and that was it, or Harley having the problem with the crew, I would not have watched. I usually don't watch more than the episode that we need to watch to talk about for the show. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that ending on this cliffhanger with Ivy invested me enough at the end of the show that I was like, I gotta find out what's going on, and I watched two more episodes. I mean, that should tell everybody out there that there was something, you know, that's another one of those Scooby-Doo moments where it's like, what, Nemesis watched two more Harley Quinn episodes without anybody telling him he had to? What is going on here? You know, so, yeah. I was like, finally, this show is doing something. That one moment, I was like, finally the show is doing something interesting that feels comic booky, that drew me in, and I was like, oh, well, now I want to know more. And I was like, where was this the rest of the season? Because even the episodes that we've liked, I've never felt like that at the end of a Harley Quinn episode up until this one, where I was like, I need to watch the next episode to find out what the heck is going to happen to Ivy, of all people. If it had been Harley, I don't think I would have cared. But I cared about what happened to Ivy. So.
Now, you bring up some interesting points. Point number one is that we didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
Point number two is that we are so invested in Ivy as a character at this point that we care about what happens to her. And point number three, it's comic booky enough, cliffhangery enough, to make us want to buy the next issue, if you will, watch the next episode, which is, you know, a really powerful writing tool when done well. And it all centers around someone that's not the main character. Go ahead, Steve, what did you think?
Yeah, my first thought was that it had something to do with Lex, because we know that Lex and Ivy have a very strained dynamic. We saw that with the Legion of Doom episode, where, you know, Harley kind of earns her way in. And particularly, and we also kind of see that Lex has a very has a way of kind of adjusting his plan on the fly when it comes to the things that he's seeing. And I'm kind of wondering if Lex might have had some plan for Ivy, or that, you know, he's trying to get her to influence Harley in some way. You know, it could be any number of those things. Certainly this company is not, you know, I really don't see it like being a Wayne Corp, you know, subsidiary or anything like that. But I could definitely see it being like one of Lex's companies. So that is certainly possible. It could be a new villain. It could be a villain that we've already seen in the Legion of Doom, but hasn't been, you know, all of that, you know, well shown. But to me, it kind of seems like it should be somebody we should recognize off the bat. Luthor does kind of seem to be the most likely person. But, you know, I could be wrong. I'm definitely open to being surprised. I, you know, don't have any set theories, really. It just seems like, you know, based on what we have, that seems to be the most likely one. But I'm kind of willing to follow along and, you know, be proven wrong on that point. I do want to go back a little bit regarding Ivy, though. And that is that we kind of seeing that Ivy definitely had a clear arc this episode. Because we see with that whole scene, the confrontation scene with Harley, that Ivy, you know, kind of starts off saying, okay, yeah, Harley wouldn't betray me, you know. She, in a way, she's almost as addicted to Harley as Harley is addicted to the Joker. So when you're talking about people as drugs, I think that that can also be true of the best friendship with Harley and Ivy, or, you know, or if you want to kind of see them as being romantic, I mean, you could interpret it that way too. I don't have a real strong feeling either way about that, but there is definitely a people addiction when it comes to Ivy. And when we start to see over the course of the episode that Ivy's getting tired of Harley's bullcrap, and that's definitely set up in the scene where she talks to Frank the Plant. And then we're starting to see towards the end that Ivy's learning, yeah, I can't trust Harley to keep her end of the bargain. I have to do things my way, if only to show Harley that you can't do this kind of thing without, you know, some consequence. She stands up for herself and she walks away, which I felt like was a really good, consistent story. And that is leading up to her getting captured and doing the job alone. So I'm kind of, I'm like Nemesis in that, you know, I really care about Ivy, and I'm really curious to see, you know, what happens next episode just looking at this, because I feel like Ivy's been the one consistent story arc in the whole thing, and that is definitely the case here as well.
Yeah, the reason that my theory is around the Legion of Doom, I think what your point about Lex is well taken, is taking episode 8 and then this episode together, and with the knowledge that we were given some knowledge about Ivy once again, not Harley, but Ivy, that the Legion of Doom has been after Ivy for a long time to join. Lex has this complex thing with her. The two of them don't like each other. This corporation seems like the perfect mousetrap for someone like Poison Ivy. It's almost like saying, please attack me. So there seems to be some sort of manipulation there. And then they're ready for Ivy once she shows up and have a way to kill her plant with like that herbicide or whatever it is, and then to capture her. So it's like, even to the point where, you know, Ivy was kind of set up at the end of, or in episode 8, where she tells Harley that the only reason they want you is because of me, because of what Lex said. And then Lex announces right at that moment that Harley is inducted into the Legion of Doom after Poison Ivy told them no. So it's like, all of this seems to be exactly what the both of you were talking about, which is, it's a long Ivy story arc, which was interesting. And it's fascinating that that's the character who's getting this incredible arc is not the main character of the show.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, for closing thoughts, I would say, I think what we three, and Jeff as well, but I think what we have discovered in watching the series so far is how much the focus and the expectation has shifted in our content, in that somehow the more interesting characters are the side characters, or sometimes we're trying to figure out kind of like who's trolling who, or sometimes we're getting mixed messages. Part of me misses the nostalgic days when Joker was evil and Batman was good, Batman would show up and beat him up and that was the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a lot of different layers of messages going on. So like I said, for me, this episode was kind of the ending of giving the series a chance to convince me that Harley is any different, because I really don't care what happens to her after this point in terms of that message. And so I don't know if that's right or wrong or good or bad, but I'm just like, okay, well, you know, you're just in that place where you're just hooked on some guy and you don't care how much he abuses you. You're always going to go back. Okay, that's who you are. That's been proven. Okay. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know if that's right or wrong. But I do want to see what happens to Ivy. And I'm also, like, I think it was Nemesis saying earlier, I also like the turn that Psycho has taken in this episode, standing up for himself, understand that he is not some D-list henchman. None of them are. I hope they continue with that. And so no matter what happens at season's end, that the three of them have the self-respect to say, you know, we're in this crew because we choose to be, but we are definitely not underlings to Harley. So that's how I'm hoping that goes. So let me hear your closing thoughts. Go ahead, start with Steve.
Yeah, in general, this really was an episode where if you kind of look at Harley, you know, it comes across very much as a going through the motions circular episode, which, you know, doesn't advance very much. But I do feel like there's definite promise in Ivy's arc, especially, you know, with the way that she's kind of grown. And I kind of like, in a way, the way that Harley and Ivy's stories are very different, which is that Harley's is about, you know, succumbing, you know, to the temptation of a person, and Ivy overcomes her temptation. You know, she says no to Harley. She walks away. She practices what she preaches to Harley in that sense. And so there's a really strong storyline with that, and I want to see more of that. Likewise, I really like what's going on with Dr. Psycho, with Clayface, with King Shark, and the way they come to that conclusion on their own. And I really love the whole scene where they confront Harley. That was the one thing that redeemed the episode to me, in addition to the epilogue with Ivy. Because it's like, I wanted to see this happen for several episodes now. I wanted to see, finally, you know, Harley go too far, and for her crew to call her out on this and say, yeah, you know what, I think you need to, you know, learn, like, what your place is in terms of our relationship with each other, you know, and you need to kind of stop doing what you're doing, or we're going to walk. And I think that moment was earned, particularly because Harley was particularly, you know, dumb this episode, you know, and it's nice to eventually see that kind of karma play out. So on that level, it's like, on the one hand, it's like half the episode is kind of hard to watch, you know, because of that. But then when you get to the end and you see the payoff is enough where I feel like, okay, you know, I gained something from watching this, even if it's the hope that, you know, next episode will build on that ending.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. Go ahead, Nemesis.
Once again, this series is very confusing. Starting with Harley Quinn, you know, Harley has changed in the comics. We've gotten this new 52 version, and then we've got Rebirth, and she's definitely not who she was when she started off. And somehow or another in this episode, I felt like Harley was right back where she was all the way in Batman the Animated Series, which was really confusing from a series standpoint, because she reverted not even to episode one of the series, but she reverted like 19 years or 30 years or however long it was, you know, she went back that many years. So I was like, wow, okay. And so that happened. And then on top of that, it's interesting to me what is going on here. And I can't put my finger on it yet. I have a little foreknowledge, of course, because I watched a couple episodes ahead, but I don't still understand where they're going with the series as a whole and with the plot. But what I've realized, and maybe the writers have realized this as well, is that Harley Quinn as a character has no future. She has no driving ethos. Poison Ivy has what she wants to do. King Shark and even the henchmen, you know what they want. You know what the Joker wants. You know what Lex Luthor wants. But it really appears to me, and I take no joy in saying this, that Harley Quinn as a character, maybe across all mediums, can't drive a story on her own. There's nothing that she wants that makes a compelling story. I don't know if what I'm saying makes any sense to you guys, but it's like, when it's just her trying to drive a plot line, you know, and it's almost like Harley came to this realization herself in this episode, all I've wanted to do this whole time was get in the Legion of Doom and show up Joker, and that was really very empty. You know, everything that I want to do as a character is void. It's empty. There's nothing there. There's no purpose behind it. And I can't pull off a series by myself that's compelling. And like I said, it brings me no joy to say that, but I'll be honest with you, watching the series has made me reevaluate Harley Quinn as a character and made me realize she really is a sidekick. She needs to be a sidekick.
Yeah, I mean, they keep trying to push her as DC's Deadpool, but this show has definitely shown that she can't do that, because Deadpool at least has motivations and a life independent of Cable and X-Force. Harley doesn't have that with the Joker, and all of her motivations is basically, you know, that obsession that she has with the Joker and all of this, and I just don't think that it's sufficient. So, of course, you have a character like Ivy, who's really strong and, you know, has clearly defined motivations and a clearly defined arc, and yeah, she's going to take over. So, yeah, I see exactly what you're saying.
Okay, well, let me speak to that right quick, because I think you touched on something very interesting. I said it before on Twitter, but what we're dealing with is possibly sidekick syndrome, like you just said, but we're also dealing with when a character is simply written as hero's girlfriend, or in this case, villain's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
You see that a lot on the CW shows. Once their arc runs out, there's actually no reason for them to stay on the show, so they have to keep making up reasons to make them relevant. And the sad part about that is for many of the female characters that they do that to, they're very interesting in the comics. They very much have their own personalities, their own motivations, their own goals, their own everything in the comics. But somehow when they're translated into other media, sometimes they're just relegated to hero's girlfriend. And we know that whoever they're with, that dude is going to die because they have to get with the hero. And then we know once they get with the hero, from that point on, it's just going to be drama in their relationship. Sometimes we know they're going to make her overimportant. Go ahead, Dan.
I think it's interesting you say that, because, you know, I'm thinking back of other shows that we've done, and you almost saw that to a certain extent with Donna Troy on Titans. She just, there were times when you're watching that show wondering, why is Donna even on the show?
You know? Right. Because that was not Donna.
Right.
Donna Troy would not be hiding from a firefight with Dr. Light behind a crate. Donna Troy would not randomly remember that she has super speed and strength. Donna Troy would not die by electrocution. Donna Troy would not curse every other, would not be dropping F-bombs out of her mouth. That's not Donna.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's, we could probably do a whole show on that, but yeah, you see it over and over again about how they strip the character of the things that made her her own person in the comics. One of the most egregious examples for me is Black Canary. On Arrow, they split Black Canary up into four different women, and none of the four were actually fully her. She's one of the most powerful, one of the most confident, one of the most skilled, one of the most respected characters and fighters in the DC universe, and she's a legacy character. Her mother was Black Canary before her. We got little to none of that on Arrow. I'm just scratching my head. I'm like, so I don't really understand what it is. That's why I agree with your conclusion about mixed messages and it being confusing. I don't understand that in a time of trying to, I guess show stronger independent women, we seem to get, you know, the practical opposite. It's confusing.
Right. I mean, yeah. And there are some things, like I said, I watched ahead and I'm looking forward to talking to the next two episodes because I think what you're saying is going to become even more prevalent. You know, it's going to come to the fore even more once we talk about the next two episodes and you watch some of what they do and you're like, why aren't you doing this all the time? I just look forward to when we get to them because I think I just don't understand what's going on, and there definitely are those mixed messages.
All right. Well, on that cryptic note, we will wrap up this episode. I want to thank my co-host, David Nemesis Howard. Thank you so much, Dave.
Hey, no problem. Always love to talk to you guys. Some really good stuff in this show today.
I want to thank my co-host, Steve Shadewing Sellers. Thank you so much, Steve.
No problem. I'm always glad to be here. We're always having a good time with these things. We're learning a lot of new things, and we're taking a lot of new ideas away from these discussions. So I'm glad to be part of it.
Thanks so much to our listening audience. Thank you for downloading and enjoying our podcast. Don't forget to check out many of the other podcasts on United Capes Podcast Network, also sponsored by Comic Crusaders. And we will see you next time on the next episode of Sloppy Spoilers.